This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's Marathon Monday, so what better time to talk about running science, right? If you're not a marathoner, don't worry. You don't need to run a marathon to get health benefits. That's coming up. Also this hour, a new study that may help explain how the octopus got to be so smart when some of its closest cousins are clams. And a survey of attitudes about gray seals on Nantucket shows some controversy, but also some areas of consensus that might be used to inform policies going forward. First, we hear from Adam Tenforti. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School, and he's a sports medicine physician at the Spalding National Running Center. It's one of the only centers in the U.S. exclusively dedicated to the diagnosis and treatment of running-related injuries. He joins us via Skype. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you work with a lot of runners, but you're also a former professional runner yourself. What's your favorite distance?
Well, when I was competing more formally during college, the 5K and the 10K distances were the longest events available to me. So that's where I focused my primary energy. Now, as I've gotten more into the recreational scene and need a fitness goal, as most do, I've actually been starting to focus on running longer distances, so primarily half marathon and marathon distances.
Have you ever done the Boston Marathon?
I have. This will actually be my fourth straight year Monday.
I actually started running a couple of years ago. Definitely not a marathoner, and I have to say I have no desire to be. But there's, I find a lot of peer pressure among not even professional, just, you know, runners who theoretically are just running for fun and health, but kind of this constant pressure. Hey, so, you know, you did a 5K. Are you going to do a 10K next? You did a 10K. Are you going to do a half? I mean, from a health perspective, you've said actually, as you're doing this more just for health and enjoyment, you've started running longer distances. Do you encourage people to do that? Do you think that's necessary to get the health benefits of running?
Not necessarily. I think what's the most important aspect of doing running is taking enjoyment from it, staying healthy, being able to consistently enjoy the sport without injury. So for some individuals, completing a 5K or a 10K distance is completely fine. Others really want the challenge of completing a half marathon or a marathon distance. And what I typically recommend is a general theme for training and for making decisions on distances to cover is just to listen to your body. If you've had an experience where you prepared for a marathon and it was disrupted by injury, or you found that there was a certain threshold of running volume where injuries were more predictably happening, it's important to identify that and to identify ways to then modify your training, maybe incorporate some more cross-training, so some non-running activities, or even train for a shorter event so that you can remain healthy and enjoy the benefits of being active and running.
There's a really widespread idea that running is hard on your body and maybe not for everybody. Would you agree with that?
Well, what I would say about running is it's a great sport. There's a lot of enjoyment that people take from it. It has great cardiovascular benefits and other health benefits. And it's an activity that a lot of individuals in America enjoy.
It's something like 20 million people that run in the U.S. at this point?
Exactly. That's the general estimates. And it's also known, though, that runners do have a high rate of injury, with estimates of approximately 50% injury rate per given year.
That's really pretty astounding that half of runners are getting injured.
Absolutely. So it demonstrates the need to really have a comprehensive way to approach these injuries and to provide better advice to the general population that chooses to run. So back to the original question of whether running is a good sport to choose or one that individuals should avoid, I think fundamentally the goal I have for individuals in a sports medicine practice is to keep them active. And if running is something that inspires them to be more active and something they enjoy, certainly it's a very convenient sport where if you have a pair of shoes or maybe not even wearing any shoes, you can just go out the door, find an area to enjoy a run, you know, you get a lot of enjoyment out of that. So the key is finding ways to keep individuals healthy and enjoying the sport.
Well, I definitely want to dig into some of those prevention measures a little bit more, but let's actually take a step back. That 50% of runners that are getting injured, what kinds of injuries are we talking about? What kinds of things should runners be looking out for?
Well, there are a number of overuse injuries, and most injuries in runners occur in the lower extremities. So we're talking about injuries to joints, including the hip, knee, foot, and ankle. We're talking about injuries typically to tendons, sometimes to muscle. And another form of injury, which is where my research is primarily focused on, is injury to bone. So the overuse injuries of stress reactions or stress fractures. So any of those areas, tendons, muscles, joints, or bone can become injured from the overuse repetitive impact that is sustained during running.
We know, obviously, that men's and women's musculoskeletal systems, joints, are a little bit different. How much of a difference in injury rates or injury types is there between males and females when you look at runners?
In general, with bone injuries, where I've focused my research, there's general consensus that females are at a higher risk for these injuries than their male counterparts. What's important to recognize is that these injuries really don't discriminate based on gender. It's an overuse injury, and some of the mechanical issues that both genders can face will predispose them to those injuries. But of course, there are biological underpinnings which can make individuals more susceptible to injury.
Well, as you alluded to, we kind of know that women can be susceptible to bone injuries. That tends to get a lot of attention, both in young athletes and in aging women. But you've actually been looking at young male athletes and kind of an under-recognized problem for that group. What's the story there?
So similar to girls and women, boys and men can also be at risk for these overuse injuries. And so what I've observed through my clinical practice and through research is that males can develop these overuse bone stress injuries. There certainly appears to be some parallels to the issues that women face with the female athlete triad, which is described as the relationship of nutrition status to menstrual function and bone health. And so in males that are not optimizing their nutrition, there's some evidence that can certainly be disruptive to their hormonal function and to their bone health. So that's where I've been focusing a lot of my work. And also, what I think can be helpful is that sometimes when girls or women hear the term female athlete triad, it could potentially be stigmatizing. And so where I try to focus my energy and the way that I counsel runners of both genders is to say, I don't believe this is a female or a male issue. This is an athlete issue. And at the centerpiece of helping athletes to stay healthy are these very basic principles of good nutrition, adequate sleep, periodization of training. And when all of those are taken into account, individuals can have a very healthy musculoskeletal system and be less likely to sustain injury.
Well, let's talk about the nutrition piece for a while. I mean, you can find as many different fad diets and experts saying they've got the way to be fit and trim and healthy in terms of nutrition, you know, if you go online and do a search or something like that. What do you counsel your patients? What are the important things to be paying attention to in terms of nutrition for running health?
One thing that I think is important and should start at a young age is the way that food is viewed. And I look at nutrition as being equally, if not more important, than any form of medication that could be recommended for treatment of a condition. So having adequate calories throughout the day is the first recommendation I would provide all athletes. Literally, breakfast is breaking the fast. So if the last time you ate was your dinner at 6 p.m. and you skip breakfast and the next time you eat is lunchtime, you might actually have a period of time, you know, greater than half of your day where your body is not seeing adequate calorie intake to support all of the basic physiological function and bone and tissue remodeling, which is important to recover from a run or from another athletic activity. So having a good caloric intake throughout the day, focusing on what we call the recovery window, which is usually within 15 to 30 minutes of an exercise bout, the calories that you consume will oftentimes help to repopulate muscle glycogen and help with tissue healing. So those are some basic issues with regards to caloric intake. And so calories can come from fat, they can come from carbohydrate. Protein, of course, is also important for tissue and bone remodeling. But then on top of that, I find that a lot of athletes are missing some of the other basic nutritional components to their health, including calcium and vitamin D. So everyone for general health is recommended by the Institute of Medicine to consume 1,300 milligrams of calcium and 600 international units of vitamin D from ages 9 to 18. And premenopausal women and males 70 years of age and younger should be consuming 1,000 milligrams of calcium and 600 international units of vitamin D. Everyone in general should be getting adequate calcium and vitamin D along with all the other components that come from food, including phosphorus, protein, that help with bone and tissue remodeling.
The numbers you're citing for how much calcium and vitamin D we should be getting sounds like a lot of glasses of milk for most people. Are you recommending that people try to get that through their food, or are you recommending supplements? I mean, both for the general population and for athletes.
Well, I think of supplements as more of an insurance policy. So, you know, a supplement assumes that science has been able to isolate the key component which contributes to skeletal health. However, there's actually some good research which has shown that food products, particularly skim milk, can be very helpful at fracture prevention. One study published by Jerry Knives actually demonstrated that for each cup of skim milk consumed per day, female runners ages 18 to 26 had a 62% reduction in stress fracture risk.
That's impressive.
Per year. Absolutely. I mean, I joke with everyone at conferences and with athletes who come into my clinic, if that were a drug, it would be a blockbuster. We'd all be on it. And yet it's something available in nature. And so what I think that speaks to, when you think about what's in a cup of skim milk, there's protein, there's phosphorus. Oftentimes milk is fortified with vitamin D. So it really gets back to the importance of having your food be a centerpiece of general health and recovery.
You, in addition to the, you know, these basics of sleep and nutrition, have some recommendations in terms of training and exercise, you know, varying what you're doing, making sure you've got time to recover. And then you've actually been kind of developing this system and this recommendation that perhaps young athletes should be pursuing high impact activities to prevent future stress fractures. That seems totally counterintuitive. How does that work?
So part of what happens with a stress reaction or a stress fracture is that it's an overuse injury to bone. So on the one hand, the repetitive overuse that's encountered with a sport of long distance running can fatigue the bone past the state in which it can adequately repair, and that's really what a bone stress injury is. But at younger ages, when you're doing a sport which involves higher rates of loading done in multiple directions, there's some good evidence that those athletes tend to have higher bone density and improved bone geometry, so the strength of bone, than those who do the more repetitive overuse sports of long distance running or do an aquatic sport such as swimming or a sport that doesn't involve a lot of the impact forces such as cycling. So what's been interesting, a lot of this research came initially from the Israeli military and has since been reproduced in track and field athletes and young runners, is that those who participate in ball sports, including basketball and soccer, tend to have a reduced risk for sustaining a future stress fracture, particularly if this is participated in during childhood or adolescence. So really around that time of puberty, which is a two-year window for both boys and girls, is where an estimated 26% of your total bone mass is acquired. So participating in basketball, soccer, or another jumping sport might be an opportunity, this window of opportunity, as some refer to it, to really build bone that will be stronger and more fracture resistant, especially if the athlete ultimately goes on to choose to do long distance running.
That's Adam 1040 of Harvard Medical School and Spalding National Running Center, making the case for all of us to drink our milk and get out there and get active. Adam joined us via Skype. Adam, thanks so much and happy running.
Thank you so much.
I'm Heather Goldstone. Up next, how the octopus got so brainy. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.